You are listening to the Scholar Circle, scholarcircle.org. I'm Maria Armudian. Vaccine hesitancy has slowed the effective response to COVID-19 in the global north, while lack of vaccine distribution has slowed the response in the global south. What does the new Omicron variant portend? Doug Becker explores.
COVID-19 has a new variant. Omicron has drastically increased cases throughout the world and has governments contemplating new measures, including lockdowns and moving school back online. The lack of global vaccinations, owed partially to maldistribution to poorer nations and partially to vaccine hesitancy among certain populations, has seemingly given rise to this new variant. Today, we will discuss the impact of the Omicron variant, the campaign to increase global vaccination rates, and a general sense of pandemic fatigue. Our guests are Heather Whipfley, Associate Professor of Clinical Preventative Medicine and International Relations at the University of Southern California. She's the author of Investigating Global Mental Health, Contributions from Political Science and Network Influences on Policy Implementation, Evidence from a Global Health Treaty, and Adva Gadot, Adjunct Assistant Professor in the Department of Epidemiology at the Center for Global and Immigrant Health at UCLA Fielding School of Public Health. She's the co-author of Incidence of SARS-CoV-2 Infection Among Asymptomatic Frontline Health Workers in Los Angeles County, California, and Cross-Sectional Assessment of COVID-19 Vaccine Acceptance Among Healthcare Workers in Los Angeles. Thank you both for joining us. Heather Whipfley, I've heard a lot about the Omicron variant. What is the Omicron variant and how does it differ from what we've been dealing with for the last nearly 2 years?
Thanks, Doug. It's great to be back again. And I hate to say I told you so, but I don't think the arrival of a new variant should be a great surprise to any of our listeners. As those in public health, such as myself, have been predicting that new variants could and would arise as the result of a lack of vaccination worldwide. So this very much is the kind of arrival of what we've been predicting for now 2 years, which is, just slight changes to the existing virus that has allowed it to avoid some of the basic protections offered by the vaccines developed. And yet just emphasizing again, and throughout this entire conversations, that the vaccines that have been developed and that are being administered around the world are still very effective against this new variant and reduce mortality and morbidity from COVID. And so, yes, we have a new variant and it is shaking up things, as we're all very aware, but vaccines are still very effective. And the bottom line remains that we need to get as many people vaccinated, both in the United States and around the world, as quickly as possible to return to what will be a new normal life.
And Adva Gadot, I know you've done some research on vaccine hesitancy. We have this vaccine available. Why aren't people taking it?
Great question, Doug. I think that is a multi-pronged response to that. You know, when we first rolled out vaccine and were surveying healthcare workers in Los Angeles about would they take it, how do they feel about it, how confident are they in the vaccine, and what are their reasons motivating them either to accept vaccine or to refuse vaccine, we saw a lot of hesitancy stemming from this sort of guinea pig notion. I think a lot of people at the beginning of the pandemic were really concerned that this is a new technology, that it hadn't been vetted quite enough for their liking. And I think a lot of people don't fully understand the intensity of the FDA's screening process and trial process through which these vaccines are vetted. So there was a lot of skepticism and a lot of hesitancy around new technologies that people feel have not been tested fully enough. You know, now we're in a very different phase of the pandemic where many millions, hundreds of millions of people have received this vaccine and several doses of these vaccines now, and can see far more anecdotally in their own lives and through published reports that the vaccines are quite safe and effective in a way that they hadn't before. And now the hesitancy is stemming from a lot of other factors, political factors, personal belief factors, a lot of pushback against perceived mandating, real mandating, and an idea that people don't have agency over their own healthcare decisions. So we have to, I think, combat a lot of this hesitancy and refusal that's coming from a place of fear or a place of the unknown, continue educating people and also meet people where they are, help them feel that they're able to have agency in their own healthcare decision-making and that they can choose to take the vaccine because it's right for them. We need to convince people of that.
And Heather, is it fair to say that these new variants are derived from the lack of vaccination, that the more difficulty we have in vaccinating people, not only here in the US, but all over the world, is what's leading to these new variants?
Well, I think that's a complicated answer. And I think the clear kind of response is that as long as we have unvaccinated populations where the disease is spreading easily, and we have populations that are only partially protected, that we can expect to see the virus continue to mutate and we'll have new variants. And probably for many years now to come, we're going to continue to see new variants. And the only and best way to protect ourselves from the evolving virus is to be vaccinated. And so it's learning to live with this disease, as many people are now talking about, accepting that COVID is now endemic worldwide and that we will have to be vaccinating and boosting ourselves for years to come. And that's the best way to protect ourselves from whatever the disease may throw at us. There is definitely still populations worldwide who need the vaccine, who don't have access to the vaccine. And the world needs to continue to focus on ensuring that we have equitable access. And there, there's still a lot of work to be done to ensure that that happens.
Advan, that's always been one of the great ironies for me, is that we have vaccines available in the US and actually throughout the global North, and people aren't taking it. And there's this pretty intense need for vaccines throughout the world, and in particular across the global South. I guess part of the answer is, why not just take all these vaccines that aren't being used in the global North and vaccinate the global South?
That's a great question, Doug. So actually there is an alliance called COVAX, which is working to do exactly that. It's being led by Gavi and the World Health Organization and several other global NGOs. And basically the premise of COVAX is exactly that, to have G20 countries purchasing doses of vaccine and helping donate them to middle and low income countries so that they can afford to vaccinate. I think their goal is 20% of each country's population. So the issue with a lot of how COVAX has been running is, first of all, that it's reliant on donations from high income countries in the global North. So the people in the global North have to decide and have the political will to give away some of what they perceive as their own country's vaccine supply. And in a lot of cases, that's highly unpopular in their own country. So they have to fight against perceived anger from constituents in that regard. I think another big issue with COVAX so far has been that a lot of the doses that have been given and have been donated have been very close to their expiration date, and they've been donated on a very ad hoc basis, so that countries in the global South have not had an opportunity to really plan for their receipt and for an efficient rollout of their distribution across their highest risk populations, first and foremost. So that's been very difficult as well. These last minute donations where countries decide, okay, no one wants it here anymore, we're going to give them away. But by the way, they're expiring in 2 weeks. Good luck to you. And a lot of those vaccines, especially these newer mRNA vaccines, require really intensive cold chain maintenance. They have to be frozen at very, very low temperatures. And a lot of countries in the global South just simply don't have the infrastructure in place to maintain that cold chain and get them distributed widely. So a lot of those issues are stemming from the shelf life of the vaccines that are given, the timeline in which they're distributed, and the forewarning that is being given to countries who are receiving these vaccines on when they might expect them, where and how.
And Heather, I know you study the World Health Organization. I think that's something we've actually talked about, that one of the weaknesses is the completely voluntary nature, you know, for funding and contributions. Is there any conversation about strengthening G20 commitments beyond what Ava just described as kind of a, you know, we'll give you what's left close to expiration and actually making this something that's mandated on the part of G20 countries?
Not potentially around G20, but the World Health Organization has had some emergency meetings. They just had a very unusual fall World Health Assembly to discuss the negotiation of a new treaty that would focus on stronger commitments from countries and requirements for them to track and respond to global pandemics. So there are some discussions about developing a more formalized and kind of applied international governance system to respond to future outbreaks. But I think that that doesn't really challenge some of the main hurdles that have confronted the world when it comes to vaccine access during COVID. And most of those kind of referring back to our international trade regimes and patent protections. And the fact of the matter is that the major vaccines that are being distributed around the world right now are patented vaccines from large pharmaceuticals. And those large pharmaceuticals have been unwilling to release their formulations to generic producers and to ramp up manufacturing around the world. And unfortunately, a number of countries have supported those industrial interests. I'd like to note that because just this past week, my colleague and friend, Peter Hotez at Baylor University just announced that he has a new vaccine and a new vaccine manufacturing agreement with colleagues in India to develop his and release his vaccine that's Corbevax, and there's no patents, no strings attached, and they're calling it kind of the world's vaccine. And this is the type of leadership, scientific leadership, and industrial leadership that we really need in order to get ourselves out of this predicament and have enough vaccine available, because now we're not even talking about vaccinating the whole world once. We're talking about vaccinating the whole world twice, three times, annually. And that's so much vaccine that we need to be producing, that we need to have a wholly different approach to its development, manufacturing, and distribution. We can't just be relying on the goodwill of donations after they're done with it in, you know, as you say, in the North or in high-income countries, which now are using more and more because what would have been donated is now being used for boosters. And so the supply that we had projected just isn't available, and we're far, far behind on even our initial commitments to vaccinate low-income countries.
And you're listening to Scholar Circle, scholarcircle.org. We're discussing the distribution of vaccines globally, as well as vaccine hesitancy in certain nations, with Heather Whipfley of the University of Southern California and Ava Gadeau of the University of California at Los Angeles. Ava Gadeau, then, that would seem to overcome some of the concerns if you could lift the patent, because my understanding, a good amount of the vaccines actually produced in the Global South, isn't it? Not necessarily it's produced here in the United States and then shipped off. So is this really sort of at the core, possibly a trade issue, and the medical emergency could actually lead to hopefully some conversations that maybe lift the patent and let Global South countries produce their own?
It's definitely in part a trade issue. It's in part capitalism issue and an issue about how we nationalize and, you know, potentially globalize our vaccine production and our healthcare distribution in general. And I just want to echo what Dr. Whipfley was saying, which is, you know, not only is Dr. Hotez's new Corbevax so exciting because it can be produced so much more quickly and around the globe in existing facilities, I want to point out, because it uses an existing technology that's actually used in the hepatitis B vaccine, which is produced all over the world. As you know, there are so many vaccine production facilities in the Global South as well. They simply don't have the infrastructure to produce mRNA vaccines yet. this vaccine and this type of strategy to use vaccine technologies that exist and for which there are manufacturing facilities available already in the global south helps reduce that time it takes to build up, to scale up, not only the facilities for production, but a lot of the know-how in distribution, in training personnel and how to, distribute, but also to store and keep these vaccines running effectively. So that eliminates a lot of that. It helps for scaling up quickly. And because it can be locally produced in country and not sent from necessarily outside of the country, I also think it would go a long way towards helping assuage people's fears over vaccinating. And I think it really will help reduce refusals and hesitancy because these aren't, reject vaccines or being perceived as reject vaccines from elsewhere. Oh, we're done with these. You can have them now. These are being produced fresh. They are made especially for this purpose, for this country's population. And they're produced in-house so that people can have faith that, citizens of their own country have their best interests at heart and are producing these vaccines for them and for their community.
And Heather Wiffley, the world is definitely experiencing pandemic fatigue. And I will personally acknowledge I am definitely feeling pandemic fatigue. What's the likelihood that this fatigue might compel some different thinking about vaccinations? I mean, there seems to be a global acceptance that we're going to vaccinate our way out of this pandemic. So might that change some of the thinking, or am I just engaging in some wishful thinking?
Well, I'm right there with you, Doug, with the fatigue. And I think, everyone is right there, including the public health community itself, who's unfortunately kind of bearing the brunt of communicating the ongoing challenges and needs to protect our communities. I think that, the message is and continues to be and will remain that we need to vaccinate to protect as many people as possible. And at this point, that's probably, I hate to say that we're going to vaccinate ourselves out of this disease, but it is likely to be an endemic disease now in our population. And the best way to protect yourself is to, practice all the things that we've learned, which is vaccinate, mask, separate when needed. Before COVID broke out, I used to talk to my students about how, we in global health really push for the use of bed nets to protect populations from malaria, and yet we don't wear masks in the wintertime to protect ourselves from influenza. Now in the post-COVID world, we're going to wear masks. We're going to wear masks probably for years to come. And that's why I think I started off by saying to you, get back to our new normal. There's no going back to the world of 2019. I don't think it exists anymore and across the spectrum of culture. And so, to think about where we're going in the future, it's going to be a slightly different relationship, I think, to viral spread more generally, and understanding that there's variants and there's other diseases that are emerging, and we have environmental degradation and climate change and all kinds of other challenges that are changing the way that we're going to interact. And so, I think that the fatigue is real, and I think we have to accept that there's going to be new normals and there's going to be new risks, and we're all figuring out where that line is going to be. And the best thing that each of us can do individually is to vaccinate ourselves, follow public health recommendations to be as safe as possible. And the world is going to open up again.
And Audra Godeau, we have about 90 seconds left. Is the fatigue going to lead to higher rates of vaccination among the more hesitant populations?
Well, I sure hope so. I hope that the mounting number of vaccine doses given and the safety that has been shown throughout, millions and millions of doses being given out will help convince some people of the safety and efficacy of this vaccine. That said, I could also see very much a fatigue of, now there's all these breakthrough cases, especially with Omicron, which is so transmissible. Does the vaccine really do anything? And I know a lot of people feel this way and are really kind of at their wit's end and concerned, that even the best protection measure we had isn't helping. And really, it really is. I know all of my healthcare worker friends are so very much seeing on the front lines in the hospitals every day that almost everyone who's coming in with severe illness is unvaccinated. And so really, as we do move from this acute pandemic phase into the endemic phase, vaccination is going to be key to preventing huge surges in hospitalizations and severe disease and turning this into a much milder annual thing. And beyond that, we have control measures that are much lower tech that we can always employ, especially when we're having big waves right now, like masking, not gathering indoors unmasked, and not eating in restaurants. Please, people, don't eat in restaurants in the midst of a huge, huge surge. Get takeout, support your businesses, but do it at home and wait till this wave subsides, and then you can go back to your favorite restaurant. So there are low tech options as well, and I think we can all get there together.
I definitely look forward to a new normal where I'm fully prepared to get vaccinated twice a year if necessary, just like flu shots. Mostly the idea of being able to go back and teach in person, maybe have a meal indoors and get together with friends. But I will echo that. We've been discussing the Omicron variant and the current state of the COVID-19 pandemic. Our guests have been Heather Whipfley, Associate Professor of Clinical Preventative Medicine and International Relations at the University of Southern California. She's the author of Investigating Global Mental Health, Contributions from Political Science and Network Influences on Policy Implementation, Evidence from a Global Health Treaty. And Adva Gadot, Adjunct Assistant Professor in the Department of Epidemiology at the Center for Global and Immigrant Health at the UCLA Fielding School of Public Health. She's the co-author of Incidence of SARS-CoV-2 Infection Among Asymptomatic Frontline Health Workers in Los Angeles County, California, and Cross-Sectional Assessment of COVID-19 Vaccine Acceptance Among Healthcare Workers in Los Angeles. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you to our guests and to you for listening. The Scholars Circle team includes Doug Becker, host, Ankine Agassian and Melissa Chiprin, managing producers. Sud Dongre, our webmaster. I'm Maria Armudian, and we'll see you next week.